Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meet the Rockadopolis. I'm Yislike Rockadopolis.
And I'm Lance Rockadopolis. And today, we're going to discuss the book, The Leather Couch.
So The Leather Couch was written by a sex therapist named Stephanie Gerlich, and she wrote it as a kind of manual on the kink world for other psychologists and psychotherapists to use for their kinky clients. So I'd been eyeing this book on Amazon for a while, and then I finally just decided to get it for the purpose of using it on this podcast. It's a relatively new book. It was published in 2021. And as far as I can tell, it does provide a pretty accurate overview of the kink world today. I have a dozen or so books on BDSM, especially books on femdom and sadomasochism. But I have to admit that overall, this book is probably the best book on BDSM that I've come across. And I would recommend it for newbies who are interested in learning more about the culture than, like, for example, the basic terminology, how to negotiate a scene. The book really goes beyond many of the topics that you can get from how-to books. This book has most of that basic information, but without the gratuitous dumbing down that we get in a lot of the how-to books. And part of that might be because it's written for clinicians, for psychologists and psychotherapists. And you can't be a practitioner in that world without having at least a fair amount of higher education. Regardless, there's very little technical and professional jargon in the book, yet it still gives non-psychologists a little bit of a peek behind the couch, so to speak. So overall, I would recommend the book to any newbie kinkster as a first choice for an introduction to BDSM. I realize it seems like an unconventional introduction, but it's the best that I've come across. But of course, Lance and I are not newbies to the kink world, and we've also had experiences with psychotherapists. I've had quite a bit more experience than Lance has. And to be honest, I've never gotten a lot out of it, with one major exception, which was during a time when I was able to disclose my first kinky relationship to a therapist. And that experience was extremely intense, and it really freaked me out. Actually, I had a fairly significant anxiety episode, but all of that was definitely worth it.
Can I ask how this therapist helped you?
Well, that's a good question because she didn't do much. What she basically did was just sit there and listen, which is the experience that I've had with most therapists. And I remember telling her about the event that ended up helping me to embrace my kinkiness. It was very, very intense. It involved criminal activity, not on my part, but on the part of the person that I was interested in. And I told her about it. And you know the story. I just don't. It's not actually my story. It's the other person's story. So I can't tell it. But it did involve extreme, unconsensual violence. And so something about that pushed me over into self-acceptance, essentially. But I remember telling her about it, and when I said what that person did, her eyes just became like like saucers, like a cartoon. Yeah. I've never seen anyone's eyes widen like that. So anyway, that was a very important experience for me. Other than being able to talk about that extremely intense time in my life, I don't think I've gotten much out of psychotherapy at all.
Yeah, most of my interactions with therapists had to deal with court-ordered therapy associated with my divorce and custody case. And I can categorically say that court-ordered therapy is completely useless and a waste of time and money. I must admit that I did get some helpful information out of a court-ordered assessment. It was basically a psychological profile that was required for parental responsibility evaluation, one of the requirements in Colorado. It was basically a summation of what I told the therapist and the results of some tests that he gave me. But the report was extremely well written, and it helped me see myself from basically an outsider's perspective.
You actually gave me that report to read. This was like 2 months into our relationship, right? It was something for the court. 70 pages, wasn't it? Right. I stood there in your kitchen and read the whole thing. Talk about full disclosure.
The other positive experience that we had was to go to a kink therapist, and I thought she was extremely helpful. Immediately when we met her, I got the sense that she understood us. I don't know exactly how she did that to convey that. Sympathy, empathy, those are completely the wrong words. I got the sense that she was one of us, like we were talking to a very smart person at a munch. What I also liked was that she was not afraid or hesitant to give advice. Like you mentioned, so many other therapists are reluctant to actually do that. They just sit there and listen. And we're apparently supposed to come to our own conclusions, and somehow that's therapeutic. The therapist that we went to had different exercises that helped me understand different perspectives, you know, so I thought that was very helpful in general.
Yeah, she was amazing. And I'm not going to give our listeners any specific information about her, but she was transgressive. She got in trouble with her licensure situation for being transgressive. And I love her so much for that. So today what we're going to do is ask the book 5 questions as a means of determining how helpful the book could be for us and for others like us, and also as an opportunity to look a little deeper into our own kinky inner lives. So let's get into it.
Question 1. How is the book's version of power exchange the same or different from ours? There are elements in the book that most certainly pertain to us and others that do not. There's a table in there that has a section describing the 24/7 lifestyle, and I found that to be truthful and applicable. It describes people in this category that fit our relationship very well. It points out that to some people, and definitely us, this is not a game to spice up our bedroom scenes. It's how we operate on a core level as kinksters. It also points out that the level of communication and effort and energy that you need to put into the relationship is very large. They also mention that the potential for abuse is highest with this form of relationship, so that's something to watch out for. The parts that do not apply to us have to do with specific kinks that we're not engaged with. They also describe other levels at which one can participate in kink, ones that I find are more superficial. The book calls those categories or levels experimentalists or bedroom only. They are actually just using it to spice up their bedroom life.
Yeah, overall, I agree that the book provides an accurate definition and explanation of kinky power exchange. It's pretty basic, but the clarity of her discussion is something that I appreciate, because other books I've read on power exchange seem dated and are mostly comprised of like a series of anecdotes. And ultimately, I just don't need to hear about other people's lifestyles in order to learn how to do it. Question 2 is, how well does the book represent our experiences in the kink world? So the book includes one paragraph on what the author calls community kink, which is basically the social world in which kinky activities are taking place. While I don't doubt that there are a lot of people doing kinky stuff privately in their own homes, there are many millions of people who do kink in community, in person, and online. And there's a lot to say about all that. Just as a mere layperson who enjoys reading pop psychology articles and listening to podcasts, I have to say that the community aspect of the kink world is not what I had hoped for. After decades of living my life in my fantasies, when I was finally ready to explore the real kink world, I was, to be honest, extremely underwhelmed. Unfortunately, political correctness forbids me from providing the details, but the vibe was shockingly unsexy. So, on to question three. How well does the book represent our personal experiences with kink?
Yeah, the book mentions the fetishes that I'm interested in, so in that respect, it's fairly thorough.
The book also provides a discussion of dominance and then focuses on an interview with a male dominant. And not only was I really surprised by his answers, I was also shocked by how different my answers would have been. To be honest, I found his answers viscerally disgusting. He comes across as extremely overconfident and egotistical, probably a clinical narcissist, because he focuses almost entirely on what he gets out of the relationship. There's nothing in that interview about what he's providing to his sub. He refers to her as a mannequin. He talked about how becoming a dom made him much more powerful in work. That's just not what I understand a male dom to be in real life.
Yeah, and it's also doesn't describe any of the male doms that I've run into at munches or clubs. Occasionally you'd see a guy talking about himself, but very rarely, in all honesty. And I would say discussions about themselves occur a lot less often than ordinary men in general. I mean, the male doms that I've encountered are usually the quiet ones. They're allowing their female subs to do most of the talking. I mean, it's fairly well known that the man talking about himself and bragging is the insecure one. It's one of the basic laws of power that Robert Greene talks about in his book, The 48 Laws of Power. It's so very obvious that very few confident male doms do that.
Yeah, that is the one major misstep that I've found in this book. It's very disturbing. I mean, I see doms, and especially male doms, as the alpha lion of the pack. And the alpha is always behind the pack. The alpha is there to protect, not to preen.
Not to show off.
Right. It's right. Disgusting. I almost think the author of that book made up that character just to make male doms look bad, because he comes across as just hideous. Question four. To what extent does the book sanitize and vanillify kink?
I think it describes kink thoroughly, but doesn't sanitize it. I'm interested to know where this question is coming from. In your opinion, is the author even writing a book about this subject a negative? Is she revealing too much or opening the curtain on a taboo subject that you find special?
Well, I do wish that PDSM were more taboo than it is now, as long as it's protected legally. And I do like feeling special and edgy, because I know that I come by my edginess very honestly. I want to be in a community of other people who are edgy. I want the kink community to be more edgy than it is, even if I'm not 100% sure of what that might look like. But what I'm concerned about, really, is the cultural and societal space that is threatened by the vanillification and dumbing down of kink on a conceptual level. Anyone can pick up a flogger and wail on somebody's back. But what matters to me is why you're doing it. It's like the difference between a blowjob and face fucking. They may be similar, but they have very different cultural meanings. I mean, for example, you know, if I'm giving somebody a blowjob, which I haven't done in like 20 years, I'm the active principal there. I am doing something to someone else. The person giving the blowjob has a lot of power, a lot of skill. When I was giving a bunch of blowjobs in my 20s, I was very proud of my blowjob skills. I got a lot of positive feedback about them. You know, I got a lot out of it. Face fucking is violent, and it turns the one with the penis into the top, right? Not into a passive receiver. The top is actually forcing the penis into the mouth, as opposed to someone forcing their mouth onto the penis. So to me, basic blowjobs are vanilla, 100% vanilla, whereas face fucking is like one of the kinkiest, you know, most BDSM based thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Too bad I don't have a real penis. I wouldn't want anybody's teeth on it, though, if I did have one. And that's got to happen with face fucking. You're going to get teeth. But just as an aside, I will be talking more about the cultural meanings of kink in the reboot of our Kink Theory podcast, which will be live within the next couple of weeks. So within the last 10 years or so, there's been an uptick in the general interest in BDSM, which has led to a huge influx of people who end up being horrified and disgusted by a lot of what kinksters are saying and doing in real life. And they're also not understanding the basic principles and needs and joys associated with consent and power exchange. So I think the book does sanitize kink in that it ignores all of the shittiness and the argumentativeness and disagreeableness that you see in kinky social worlds. Since I've been on FetLife, most of the disagreeability that I've been exposed to has focused on social justice grievances, for lack of a better term. Now the social justice stuff has largely devolved into straight up misandry, and it has nothing to do with kink. I see it as basically the vibe of vanilla social media spilling into the kink world, and that is really unfortunate.
I noticed in the book that she does talk a lot about trauma and violations within the kink world and how therapists can help overcome those sorts of instances. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking more about the conversations people are having amongst themselves and that sort of disagreeability.
It's when people are going off topic, right? They're going away from kink, but using kinky spaces in order to harangue people.
Last question, question five. What are two significant things that both of us have learned from the book? This is not new, but the book points out the stigma against kinksters and the basic notion that therapists need to be educated on this subject points out the reticence of professional therapists to think about and talk about the subject. I thought the last chapters of the book were more interesting than the beginning. In the beginning of the book, like you mentioned, it has a lot of basic definitions and concepts that your average practitioner of BDSM would be very familiar with. The later portions of the book give advice and questions for therapists to pose to their clients and to consider in their evaluations and their interactions with their patients. I thought those sections were particularly helpful.
So in those sections, did you find you were learning almost as a patient or a client?
Yes. I thought, wow, that's an interesting question. I need to consider that. So that's why I found it helpful.
Overall, I was surprised at the depth of knowledge that Gerlich provides on the topic. The whole book is exceptionally well-researched, and I didn't expect that at all, given all of the other kinky books that I've read. But unfortunately, I don't think I really learned anything new either. And I really do want to learn something new about BDSM. I long for deeper discussions of BDSM and the kink world, and I'm having trouble finding it, and it's frustrating. I mean, so far, the sum of all of the research that I've encountered just isn't really adding up to any kind of complete understanding or new understandings. Like, not even any questions that are out there.
One thing that I thought was missing from the book was the idea that kink can actually be therapy in and of itself. I mean, we talked about my experiences with being bullied during my adolescence and how kink has this potential to allow for me to become comfortable with that prior experience. There are plenty of therapists that either try to normalize kink or help people try to overcome their kinks if they're impediments to their ability to have relationships. And this book does talk about that. I'm just wondering why there's a lack of research in the topic, the potential for kink to be a therapy. I mean, the book does mention doing artwork as a therapy or, you know, exposure therapy, and that's well covered, but not kink itself. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I'm just not looking hard enough online, but I'm just not seeing it anywhere in the therapy world.
Yeah. Well, within the lay kink world, the part of the kink world that's not filled with kinky professionals, I've seen a lot of claims about the therapeutic benefits of BDSM itself. And I personally have stayed away from that idea because I need to see evidence of rigorous education and training in my mental health practitioners. There's no way that I would go to a non-certified kinkster to help me somehow somatically get over something by being beaten or by beating someone. That is not at all why I'm doing kink. However, there is such a thing as somatic psychology, which focuses on the mind-body connection. Back in the 90s, I had a session with a somatic psychologist who is being trained in the HANA somatic technique, which is still around, and it was very, very cool. I laid down on a massage table, but I wasn't getting a massage. Basically, the person who was doing the technique on me was touching me very lightly up and down my body and having me sense everything that was going on, like being very conscious of everything that I was feeling. And there was things that I just couldn't feel, any places where I couldn't feel anything, places where the feeling was very strong. But for several days after that session, I felt like a ballerina. I would be walking around with my arms almost floating. Basically, I just had so much awareness of my body, and it felt so good. So maybe the world of somatic psychology could conceivably develop a rigorous, well-researched, BDSM-based form of somatic psychology.
I don't mean to take this down into the gutter or anything, but your description just reminded me of how I feel after a good pegging session.
Just the pegging does that for you?
Yeah.
Well, see, that would be an example. But you're already very body conscious and very much in your body. I mean, that's one of the really attractive things about you. But to actually somehow get some kind of grant or something to see what it would be like to merge the HANA somatic technique with BDSM, who knows where that could lead. So this concludes our episode for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Our next episode will be a discussion of part 3 of the book, More Than Two, which has an emphasis on power dynamics in poly relationships. So until then, have a great week.